It's 8:45 on the clock. We're on. We will call to order the Board of Supervisors meeting. We will start by anybody who can stand and recite the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Opens Meeting Act is posted there on the east wall. Attendance by observation, Juergens, Hill, Bauman, Dorn, Lytle, Byers, and Thiemann. The consent agenda. Number one is the general agenda. Number two, approve minutes of the meeting held February 17th, 2016. Approve all claims through March 2nd, 2016 in the amount of $412,900.65. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve specification for quotes on a two-year agreement for the lawn mowing and fertilization program for county facilities. Quotes to be received by March 11, 2016.
I would move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any questions? Vote. 7-0 in favor. Then our regular agenda. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. And at this time, we would welcome anybody that's here would like to talk about the wind farms or anything else. I'll just make this quick comment. Roger informed us last time that not knowing if both people with an interest in this are here or not, we as a board are not allowed to ask questions today. That will be at our public hearing on March the 17th at 6 o'clock. At that time, we as a board will be allowed to ask anybody questions, because if they're not here, they know about the public hearing and they have ample opportunity to attend that or whatever. So at this time, we will welcome anybody who would like to come up and please give your name and address, and we welcome comments. Let me be first. Yeah. Your name and address.
Karen Meyer. 2964 Southwest 42nd Road. That's 42nd Ash area. The wind farm development, those involved, I feel is nothing but a Rob, hey Peter, to Rob Paul. As I stated last week, those not involved, the property values go down. And how are we going to sell our property if and when we would like to move? But yet we're still taxed at the assessed value. We find out that loss when we go to sell. Who's responsible for this loss to us? It's a concern of mine. My electricity rates are not going to go down with all these windmills, wind turbines are producing electricity. And as was stated last week, the kids with, I'll call it disorders, where they need certain environment, that these wind turbines will disrupt that environment for them. And the parents have their kids in a good environment right now, but then this comes in and disrupts that. Some stated they'd move. But how easy is that when you have a mortgage and now you have to go out and get another mortgage? You got two mortgages, and what's that debt-to-income ratio? Can they get another one? And then more importantly, or equally, are they going to be able to sell that home that they have to move from? If they don't want to live there, doesn't that reduce the probability of other people wanting to live in that type of situation? There's a development outside of Cortland. And I've been told that gentleman, there's been three people that have asked about buying lots, and because of the wind farm situation, have chose not to. And I have someone in my area tell me somebody was thinking about building, but they're not going in now because of the wind farm. So that's material from Gage County that's not going to be bought now. Taxes, property taxes being paid on the properties that are not going to be paid now. So that's a loss. The opponents, we're not opposed to Volkswind building. these wind farms, but golly, my, not in the residential, the agricultural residential area in the country like where we live. When I think of agriculture, I think of row crop, pasture, open area where these windmills would sit, not in areas where people live, that they're in their backyard. And the area where I live, there's a lot of irrigation, the pivot irrigation. So these windmills can't go in the center, in the section, kind of away from. They got to go on the outside. So that just that puts it closer to the road, closer to people's property. I hope when you're considering your vote that you take some of these considerations into mind. And as Michael stated last week, the difference on them decibel ratings, just 10 points is about double the amount of sound. So it doesn't sound like much, but on that logarithmic scale, that is a tremendous difference. I believe a lot of us moved to the country for the quietness. No lights, no motion. When I go get home at night, I step out of my car and I just listen to how quiet it is, what it's really like to be out there and just no noise, because the city, even at night, has a hum to it. There's noise, whether there's anything going on. And I believe that that's why a lot of us are out there in the country, to enjoy that quietness, no motion, no lights, and bringing these industrial pieces of machinery out there where we live in the country will greatly disrupt that. And it's just no good. And as I've said probably three times now, if I don't want to live there, I don't know who else would want to live in that situation. They just don't belong in that type of environment. I'm sorry. Maybe the zoning needs to be looked at a little different. Agricultural, is there agricultural row crop pasture, or is there a residential agriculture where it's the country where people live? Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
Hello. I'm a new face to this group. My name is Tori Linneman. I'm here for a couple of reasons. I live at 26969 Homestead Expressway, Princeton, Nebraska, which those of you who don't know, it's Highway 77 between Princeton and Cortland. My husband and I, if you're not aware, we're hosting this year's Cattleman's Ball at our ranch right there off Highway 77. Not why I'm here today. I'm actually here in a professional capacity. I'm actually Dr. Tori Linneman. I am the director of graduate studies in special education and early childhood special education at Concordia University, and I am the former assistant special education director and district learning coordinator for Norris Public Schools. I've served as a consultant and content expert for Vanderbilt University regarding strategy instruction in students with disabilities, in particular students with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. I have a broad base of knowledge in instruction and students research and practice regarding persons with disabilities. I'm here today to provide my professional opinion on the potential harm the wind turbines present to persons with disabilities, particularly those persons with sensory disabilities. Persons with sensory disabilities include persons with autism, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, Tourette syndrome, multiple sclerosis, vision impairments, hearing impairments, and even speech and language disorders. Sensory disabilities often cause sensory disabilities cause difficulties with processing information in the five classic sensory systems: vision, auditory, touch, olfaction, and taste, in addition to the sense of movement and potential and the positional sense. For persons with sensory disabilities, sensory information is sensed normally but perceived abnormally, meaning that sensory information tends to be analyzed by the brain in an unusual way that may cause distress or confusion. This distress and confusion can have a significant impact on a person's daily functioning. This sensitivity can lead to serious emotional problems and aggressive behaviors, which often interfere significantly with learning, playing, and daily living activities. Sensory issues can be on a broad spectrum. Being annoyed and distracted by the sound of a noisy ventilation system, an inability to tolerate normal lighting in a room, or the scratchiness of a sweater, and even feeling pain from clothing rubbing against the skin. These are all very common symptoms of persons with sensory disorders. In a school, when a child is so strongly affected by background noises or tactile sensations, he or she can totally withdraw, become hyperactive or impulsive, or lash out as part of a primitive fight or flight response. This often warrants significant intervention. When I asked my colleague, Dr. Brenda Tracy, the director of special education and student services at Norris Public Schools, what she thought about having wind turbines placed near schools or around children, she said, "That would be a complete disaster." Those of us in the public school systems understand the impact that this would have on children, and in turn, children with disabilities, and in turn, all children in the classroom, in addition to their teachers and professionals that work with these students. I'm not here to educate you about Gage County, but I did want to point out that in Gage County, over 10% of the population has been under the age of 65 has been identified as a person with a disability. This is commensurate with national statistics, so it's not abnormal low or abnormal high. But that means in an average classroom of 20 students, at least 2 students would have a disabling condition. The population in Gage County is distributed at a rate of over 26 people per square mile, meaning that 2 or 3 people per square mile have been identified with a disability. Or those of us from rural Nebraska would maybe rather see it as 2 or 3 people per section having a disability. The needs of these people cannot be ignored and need to be addressed. It is certain that the disturbance that wind turbines would create would impact their daily living and certainly affect everyone around them. I certainly hope that you consider the well-being of everyone in the county. I guess that's all I have.
Thank you very much. Tori?
Well, I wish I could ask questions.
Well, that's the unfairness in a situation like this.
Yeah.
You can't. The other side doesn't have a chance.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, and it's really, I hope everybody waits until the scheduled hearing when all sides can be heard for this board.
Right.
Yes. And as everybody knows, our public hearing is March 17th, and there will be an opportunity for everybody to speak at that time. And at that time, we will be, as a board, allowed to ask questions. So
I just had to make a comment, Counselor.
You bet.
No. That's why we have.
Yep.
It's so hard not to.
Go ahead.
Okay. Hello, I'm Jamie DeYoung. I live at 1814 Southwest 100 Road, 2 miles north of Claytonia. About 2.5. We moved in there about 5 years ago from northern Lancaster. We were renting, wanted to own an acreage, and now we own one. And we raise rabbits, chickens. We don't raise the horses, but we have horses that I use for my therapy. I thought I'd follow. Well, I didn't know Tori was going to be here, but I have multiple sclerosis and have read things that actually just came up in my multiple sclerosis groups that have talked about wind turbines, because in other countries, people with MS have seen the deficits they cause to their conditions. And excuse me. I wasn't going to talk. So I also have 2 children who currently do not have problems, but you never know with kids, you know, what might set off issues with them, because, I mean, they've got my bloodlines. A 14-year-old and a 5-year-old, they go to Wilbur Public Schools, and I would hate to see them suffer in their schooling because we ended up with wind turbines. I know I've seen the maps of the placements of the leases that had already been signed, and We had one 1 mile north and one either 1 or 2 miles east of us, and no one notified me, which disturbs me that the county doesn't send out notices like, oh, hey, by the way, this might be coming in next door to you. I found out through a person I was using for some other services, and she said, oh, hey, have you heard about this? And showed me the maps that she had of all of the turbines that had already been signed contracts on. And it's, I don't know, it just kind of concerns me. And I don't have a lot, like I said, I didn't prepare anything to talk. I know I was just talking with some people I came down here with. I had seen about 20 years ago when I was studying animal science at South Dakota State University about the rate of gain for cattle being affected by having turbines in their fields. I will look up more of that information, bring to you guys hopefully next week, 17th sometime. But anyway, thank you.
Thank you very much, Jamie. We do have a timed event at 9 o'clock, and normally we would break for that. I see Phil out in the hall, so we must be waiting for the gentleman with the veterans, but he's not here yet, so we will continue. So, anybody else?
My name is Curtis Schwaninger. I live at 3750 West Hellam Road, Hellam, Nebraska. And I'd just like to reinforce what Tori said and suggest that any ordinance or law that you make needs to protect. These laws must be sure to address the most vulnerable in any given area, and that would be the elderly, the chronically ill, and the children. And so them are the three things that we really need to address when we talk about these wind farms. And the World Health Organization says 40 decibels is the limit of what the noise should be from a wind tower, and I think we need to follow that because they're really pretty sure about that. I think I've sent each one of you a copy of this that was in the Journal Star on February 14th about noise harder on children and hinders learning, and so we need to take that into consideration when we decide on what decibels we have there, and we need to really set it at, I think, not go over 40%. They had the wind company had an expert, so-called expert from Massachusetts, come in at the Planning Commission, and he agreed that the World Health Organization set the top limit at 40 decibels, but he said that 47 would not hurt because it's only part of the time that 47 decibels would be caused by a wind tower. But you really can't prorate noise. You can't prorate it over 10 days or anything else any more than you can prorate pain. When that 47 decibels would come at you, it would do the damage right there, just like pain is. Pain does the damage right away. You can't prorate it on down the thing and say you had half the pain you've had before. And so I think that's the same way with noise. You just can't prorate it. It's noise at the time is being done, and so we need to be careful about that. And so I think 40 decibels is probably the limit you should put on a wind tower, my suggestion. And there's DBAs, decibel A, and there's also decibel C, which takes into consideration infrasound. Infrasound is something that you can't hear. It's a pressure sound. It permeates your body. It permeates buildings, causes ringing in your ears, different things. It's something that's being studied more. Not a whole lot of information on it right now, but it's being studied more. I think we need to take that into consideration and maybe make it DBCs instead of DBAs. Thank you.
Thank you, Curtis. Not today. Okay, because I know you've talked before. Is there anybody else, the public comment, anybody else like to get up and talk about anything? Seeing none, we'll move on our agenda then. And thank you. And just as a reminder for everybody that's here, too, I'm sure you've forwarded that on to everybody else. But March 17th at 6 o'clock that evening, that's when we will have our public hearing here.
Are you going to have a meeting on the 10th, too, another regular board
The 16th. We do every 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah,
the 16th, we do. We are having our regular board meeting on the 16th, and then the 17th at 6 o'clock at night. That will be just the public hearing for the wind farm. We won't have we as a board had a lot of discussion and decided not to hold the two together because our board meeting will last hour and a half, 2 hours. Depends on what we all have, so we didn't want that on with the wind farm agenda, so we decided to pick a separate date. And the only problem is Matt made the motion to do that. He said that is St. Patty's Day, so
yes,
everybody keep your comments short, so if you have to go somewhere that night, you can. So
but
anybody, we welcome everybody for that. At that time, we will that will be a public hearing, so that this board will have ample opportunity to ask any speaker questions, because of the fact that that's a public hearing. And the other side, we're pretty sure they'll be here, but if they're not, they've had the opportunity. They were notified publicly about the meeting, so they had the opportunity to be here. And then it's their decision not to be. So then we will have ample opportunity that night to ask questions. So thank you.
Thank you.
I don't see Phil yet. We're going to have, at 9 o'clock, we have a Donald Burke there. So we will go into committee reports because we don't have anything else until 9:15. Buildings and grounds, winter lights, committee reports.
Nothing really unusual. Dave continues working on the restrooms, and we'll continue with the situations that we have with the probation office and what have you, but nothing unusual to report today.
Enough. Equalization.
Nothing other than what we heard earlier.
Talk about. You bet. Finance.
Just to share that Don scheduled an insurance meeting with our carrier March 16th. It'll be after that county meeting at 11:30. It's kind of just a lunch meet to go over some updates. So just a handful of us will be there. So.
There's Phil.
And I'll there's Phil. Okay. As soon as they're in. I'll just bring up, I guess, in finance as much as anything, I can't remember his name. The guy did get down at Wymore. He did get the inspection done for that building.
Ron Thompson.
Ron Thompson. Thank you. Yeah. And he called me yesterday. He has to send in stuff for testing. Once that report's back, he'll give it to Don. So at our next meeting, depends on what the report says or not or whatever, we may... we'll have our committee meetings or our board meeting. We'll have a discussion how we want to proceed with that once we get that report back. So,
okay.
Raffle.
Human resources.
Nothing.
Law enforcement. Emergency management.
The emergency management thing, I asked Tim to come up and speak about the storm spotter training that will be coming up here in a little bit. So let Tim talk about that here.
Morning. March 15th, we are going to have our annual storm spotter training that the National Weather Service from Omaha puts on for the whole state of Nebraska, or Omaha does our area, but the National Weather Service does the whole state. They do this to help with awareness for the local responders as well as the public. They're welcome to go to that as well to understand what to look for with severe storms, tornadoes, lightning, hail, all that information, winds, shapes of clouds, what the certain clouds when they look like. Sometimes people get confused with certain clouds thinking that they're wall clouds when they're shelf clouds or different types of wind clouds, all kinds of other information or problems with misunderstanding what the clouds look like, and that can give some false alerts to the dispatch or to law or whatever. Same thing with gustnadoes. They talk about those during that time of the year. A lot of farm work's been done out there, and like dust devils, they can be pretty big, and during that time of year, there's a lot of wind moving around, and they cause some big, looks like tornado-type damages. They can get very strong winds during that time, but the deal with a tornado is that the tornado funnel cloud is not touching ground, so it's not considered a tornado. So that's where they get confused with some of that terminology. And that's what they need to make sure to have that for disaster claims and all that information for to make sure they got that correct. But Gage, Jefferson, and Saline County are all getting together at the Homestead National Park at the Education Center at 7, and hopefully get several people trained. I think last year we had about 40 people there from Jefferson, a few from Gage, a few from the public and Gage. We're not sure on how many people are going to show up from Saline. They had a different type of program over there. They had, you know, they had a meal and whatever else going on over there. So they had, he had pretty good draw over there. Some of our people went to that direction as well. We don't have the food and drink and all that going on. We're also going to be
business. We're all business. No food.
Yeah, just business. That's what we want. who is going to get the information out to people and not make a big show of it? Like the National Weather Service likes it that way too.
And this is open to the public.
So open to the public.
Anybody's allowed to.
Anybody's allowed to go to it.
Encouraged.
Yeah.
Do you? I don't know. Do you? At one time, they used to have maybe spotters in towns. Is there or around the county, or do we have anything like that, or is this training for that? I guess.
Yeah, they can. It's for them to show up. They know that we're having it. It's up to them to show up, obviously. But it is for them as well. That's what they really want to focus on, is to get kind of a refresher course of, like I said, what to look for, because you know it's only a certain time of the year. I mean, and. The terminology at the Weather Service changes quite often with their technology and then their discoveries on how certain storms react by past history and experiences that they've experienced. Like, for instance, when that tornado went through Moore, Oklahoma, when it did all kinds of wild and crazy, you know, stuff, actually circled an area. It did, you know, it went east. And it went north, went west, and it went back and continued this cycle back through. And it caught several storm chasers and actual professional storm chasers from the Weather Channel, and they actually lost their lives in it. So there's a lot of things learned from those that are always forwarded on every year. So. We'll also be using our Salamander system, which is the ID, which incorporates the IDs that we've given out for the county responders as well. It also uses the driver's license, so the public can be actually ID'd. And it's just a ID saying who you are and whatever, and you're part of the event. And so we'll be using that, getting used to. Using that for those type of events and actually getting people used to being part of that and having that as one of the steps to respond to a major disaster. Also helps, since I just got it last month, will help me get used to it as well. It's a pretty simple thing. Anything else?
Questions for Tim? So hopefully have a good turnout at that.
Good.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
Gus, you have anything you want to add, being you were unable to be at the meeting on Monday?
No, I think what I had Chief talk about was enough. I'll have some more things in the next meeting to write on.
Okay.
Thank you. Road and Bridge.
Okay, Myron. Of course, at our Monday meeting, we had discussions on bids. We have bids on armor coating coming in, bids on rock and gravel, and bids on a new dump truck. Mike Klein from Nemaw Township was present, and we had a discussion on spot rock and possibility of stockpiling rock at their township location. It's something we've we entertained. There'll be further discussions of that. Township meeting will be March 23rd at 7 o'clock at the Extension office. And those are the few of the items we'll discuss that night, things like that, rock, gravel, allocations, and everything else. Bridge crew has been inspecting bridges. There are 174 bridges in Gage County, 20 foot and under. The inspections are done. Also, there are 4,872 culverts in Gage County. Crew also looked at all of those. Where possible, some underwater, you know, you can't visually inspect those, or dirt or whatever filled. So, highway policies for townships. Galen's going to clarify a few issues in there about spot rock, size of the spot rock, and amounts of spot rock. We'll have discussion on that also at the township meeting. Grader blade cost right now is $96.20. Current expenditures that we've had, basically on the road and bridge side, township gravel, we budgeted $725,000 for the year. We spent $655,000 of that budget. County rock, $200,000 has been budgeted. We spent approximately $152,000 of that. And county gravel, $210,000 dollars were budgeted. We spent approximately $91,000. We'll be hoping for a good spring.
Yes. Yes.
About it.
Galen, anything you want to add on that? Or Nope. If not, I think we're anybody else. Otherwise, if not, we do have a timed event at 9:15, and we're done with committee reports. I'll entertain a motion to close bids for spring rock and gravel.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Bauman, seconded by Juergens. Vote 7-0 in favor. Or how many we have? Rock and gravel. Okay. Ouch. On down the tree. Okay.
I'll try to be as generic as possible. This first bid is from Rock On Incorporated. Rock On submitted a bid from trucking only from the site's quarry. Cost for just trucking only varies throughout the township from approximately $6.50 to as low as $2.60 per ton. Rock On also submitted a bid for trucking only from Weeping Water. Those cost per ton range anywhere from $9.05 up to as high as $12.95. Also submitted a bid for trucking only from Du Bois. Those bids range from $11.70 to as low as $6.80 per ton. That is from Du Bois. So that is that one. The second one is from Rock On Incorporated, gravel bid. Rock On trucking only. This is only trucking, again, on this bid from the Alex Pit. The prices range from $10.26 per ton. down to $6 per ton. Rock on trucking only from the Powell pit. Gravel now. There's a range from 908 per ton down to a low of 473 per ton. And that completes that one. This is a rock bid from Bonston Quarries, LLC, Wymore. Which one shall I pick out here? Why don't I just use the common ones here? We've got one-inch crusher run, $14 per ton. This is pit price now. One-inch crusher run, $14 per ton. One-and-a-half-inch crusher run, $14 a ton. We'll go this way. One-inch crushed rock, $15.50. One-and-a-half-inch crushed rocks, $15.50. Those are kind of the general ones that are the common ones. We'll use those. And there's other bids on the bid sheet. Other bids here for riprap screenings and stuff like that.
And that was from which
Barnston Quarry LLC. This one is for Ace Sand and Gravel. Basically, pit price per ton is $11 per ton. Also included is pit price plus hauling cost for each township. The cost is $11 per ton for the material, the gravel, and the delivered price ranges throughout the county, anywhere from a high of $19.15 per ton, total cost now including the material, to as low as $14.80 per ton delivered. This is a bid from RL Teeman Construction. It's a bid for screened bank gravel from Powell Pit. Pit price on the gravel is $10.40 per ton. The cost delivered price range from material and delivery per township range from $19.73 for a high of all the townships to a low of $15.38. Again, a bid from RL Teeman Construction Incorporated. This is a Alex Pitt, material from the Alex Pitt, owned by NEPCO. This would be material and delivery. All the townships are listed again, but I'll just pick out the high and the low. The high would be a total cost per ton of $21.06 to a low cost of $17.50.
regards to.
This is a bid from Beatrice Concrete Company. I'll start out with the pit price. 1-inch crusher run, no bid. 1.5-inch crusher run, $1,270 per ton. 3/4-inch crush rock, $1,450. 1-inch crush rock, $1,450. 1.5-inch crush rock, $1,450. Also bid for screenings and riprap. I don't think I clued them in the last one, so I'll leave those out, but they're all right here. But these would be the major items that the county would use. We have a delivery cost per county, too. It doesn't say the delivery cost range from, and they've got the rock cost at $1,450 per ton. Delivered cost, we've got a high of $20.79 per ton to a low of $17.22 per ton. This bid is from Martin Marietta, Leaping Water. I'll find it here pretty quick. Pit price, 1.5-inch crusher run, $1,230. 1.5-inch crush rock, $1,480. No bid on the 3/4 crushed rock or the 1-inch crushed rock. So those two are the 1.5-inch crusher run, $1,230. 1.5-inch crushed rock, $1,480. And that's pit price. This bid is some consolidated sand and gravel from Fairbury. Pit price for the gravel, the material is $10.40 per ton, and we have a delivered price that ranges anywhere from $20.52 to a low of $15.69 to different locations in the county, different townships. Okay, the last one we have here, consolidated sand and gravel, Fairbury gravel bid. This is washed gravel, $10.65 per ton, delivered cost. Throughout the counties range from to a high of $21.34 down to a low of $17.08. Delivered price per township is all listed in here. And that concludes that, Myra. Now, one thing I'd like to say is we've got a lot of bids submitted. I want to thank everybody for submitting those bids to us because we have different options this way. It's a lot better than what we've had in the past. So, as we've done in the past, I would like to submit these to the Gage County or Galen at the county office and have him look these over and accept all bids. And Galen will go through that and find the lows and come back with a report. But we, as of right now, we'll accept all bids. And Galen will go through these. It'll take a little bit to get that right and bring us the lows.
I'll entertain that as a motion, so I have it on record that we accepted those bids that you read in.
Okay.
So you want to make that motion?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion right now to accept all bids we received today for rock and gravel.
Second.
And as I guess I better include, and the hauling part of it also.
Also, and we're referring them to the highway department.
Yes.
So then are you going to go back in 2 weeks and do anything then? Or are we done?
Well, I think it'll take a while to compile that. I think we better accept the bids for now as we've done in the past and then come back with a recommendation in 2 weeks. Is that what we've done, Galen? Yeah.
That's what we've normally been doing, yes. In 2 weeks, we'll have it on the agenda to have a motion to. Today, we're just accepting those bids read in. We're not making the decision on which one definitely got the hauling or not.
So we'll be approving or disapproving the rock and gravel in 2 weeks.
Yes, approving or disapproving the rock or gravel bids in 2 weeks. Yes.
And it's your choice.
Okay.
Motion by Juergens, seconded by Lytle. Vote 7-0 in favor. Yes, and thank you very much for everybody who did bid. We appreciate that very much. Taking the time and the effort to submit a bid, we appreciate that from the county's perspective. So, we also have another timed event now at 9:30, and Phil, Mr. Burke must not be showing up again. Says no, we will have maybe this next time we'll just go out and visit with them and make it so that we connect or whatever. So, for whatever reason, we don't know they. They said they would be here today, and then not. So, but we at 9:30 entertain a motion. It is 9:32 on the clock, so we'll entertain a motion to close the bids for the 2016 Gage County Armor Coat.
Make a motion to close bids on the Armor Coat project.
Second.
A motion by Juergens, second by Bauman. Vote 7-0 in favor. So.
These bids are for approximately 29 miles of armor coating throughout the county. Well, these are together. Okay. These includes approximately 382,800 square yards of armor coating. This first bid is from Stay-Built Construction Company out of Harlan, Iowa. This is the bond. These are broke down per section or per separate roads. I'll read them in as they were wrote in here. The first one is for C-34-1055 project. This would be Claytonia South to DeWitt, 8 miles, a total cost of $101,865.10. The second bid is for C-34-1056, Laetona North for 2 miles, a total bid of $25,467.45.
Terry, could you read the first one again, please?
Yes. The first bid is for armor coating C-34, Project 1055, Laetona South to DeWitt, 8 miles. The total bid, I'll slow down a little bit, the total bid, $101,865.10.
Thank you.
The next separate project, armor coating project C-34-1057, Ellis North, 6 miles, a total of $73,050.40. The next one, armor coating C-34, project 1058, North 19th Street, 4.5 miles, a total cost of $57,277.45. The next one, armor coating, project C-34-1065, Holmesville Road, 8.5 miles, a total cost of $361,157.55.
You sure that wasn't the total cost of everything?
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm back up.
Yeah.
Total cost on that one. I'll redo it. C-34-1065, Holmesville, 8.5 miles. Total cost of that individual part, $103,497.15. A total project cost of $361,157.55. Okay. Thank you, Myron.
I see her. She made sure. She turned around and made sure you passed that on.
Make sure it was appropriate first.
Oh, you had to make sure it was appropriate.
This bid for armor coating is from Top Coat Incorporated out of Yankton, South Dakota.
I knew that was going to happen.
Okay, the that's the bond.
Get it all.
First project, C-34-1055, Claytonia South to DeWitt, 8 miles, a total cost of $87,707.58. Second project, armor coating C-34-1056, Claytonia North, 2 miles, a total cost of $21,927.81. Third one, C-34-1057, Ellis North, 6 miles, a total cost of $62,893.76. Next, C-34-1058, North 19th Street, 4.5 miles, a total cost of $49,313.65. Last one, Holmesville Road, 8.5 miles, project C-34-1065, a total cost of $89,108.23. The project total submitted would amount to $310,951.03.
So those were the two. We had
We have two bids, and that's it, the way I understand it.
I'd make a motion to refer those to the Highway Department for review, and if you can get it done today, otherwise if we come back in 2 weeks.
My only question is, was there a timeline when they could start or anything? I mean, the 2 weeks isn't going to delay anybody or anything, will it?
I think it went from May 1st to June 1st.
Okay.
Myron, this gentleman would like to talk.
I'm going to talk, though.
You want to come up front?
Yeah.
Yep, come up here.
Leave a little bit. And the way the oil works is we have to lock it in.
Right.
Could you identify yourself, please, sir, for
I'm
the record?
Dan Osborne with Top Coat Incorporated.
Thank you.
So
you'd like a decision today, in other words, you're saying?
If I could.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that we'll have Galen look at those here for a few minutes, or unless you see something different, I guess, is there a question, or should we? I mean, if they don't meet... I'll make this comment. If they don't meet specs or bids, then that would disallow the bid. I mean, or we would have to confer with them. So we should take it into account, I guess, that they should meet bids. Terry?
Well, I'm sure they're going to meet specs. What he said makes sense to me.
Yes.
I don't think it's going to take Jalen too long to make a decision on this one. I would let him look over the bids and come back with a decision.
Before our meeting's done here in the next few minutes, we will make a decision.
It's not so much the time. We're prepared to come in and get it done before that date.
Right.
It's to get the gravel hauled to that location before that date.
Okay, now.
That's the hardest.
And that's why I asked Galen. Is there a time or there something that, Neith, I'm glad you came forward and let us know that you're going to lock in the price of the oil and stuff. So, thank you.
Okay.
Myron, I'll withdraw my statement as a motion and just request that before we...
Let's refer that to Gate. Refer both them to Gate on. Let's let him look those over, and we will come back and make a decision here in the next few minutes before we end our meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Yep.
Myron,
do we need to accept the bids before he reviews them?
Yeah. Yes, we should.
Accept it because he...
Yeah.
Well, I'd motion to accept the bids.
Second.
We have a motion to accept the bids and have Galen review those. By Bauman, seconded by Lytle, and then we will come back yet and hopefully make a decision here at this board meeting. Vote 7-0 in favor.
Just as a statement of fact, we budgeted $435,000 for armor coatings.
Do we want to discuss if Galen comes back with that as an okay bid, do we want to discuss additional mileage, or do we want to discuss any of this at that time? Or
should. Where very much should, because for them, that's going to make a difference what they know they can lock in or not, or what.
The gravel again.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, for us, it's not a big deal. But for the oil and gravel.
For your products to have those available at the cost you're planning on, that would be very important.
Yes.
So, yes. And I believe Galen will have to ask Galen, and he'll have to notify us too, but I believe part of the bid, and maybe somebody else correct me, part of the bid was if there was allowable room in there, there was an option of maybe adding miles.
We can add or subtract.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
I think it's just important to point out that when we put this budget together, we were looking at oil prices back almost a year ago when we were putting the budget together, and so we're looking potentially at the low bid as we talk about it now, almost 30% less than what we had bid for the total project.
Myron, one other question.
Go ahead.
If you don't mind.
Yes.
What would be, and this might be a question for Daniel, what would be the possibility if we know going out a year what miles we're going to want to look at armor coating next year, or if we have miles, being the climate that we're in right now as far as oil prices and different stuff, would it be favorable for us to look at going ahead and maybe putting out another bid structure for maybe next spring that we can include into the next budget year pricing? If you follow what I'm saying?
I'm following what you're saying. Basically locking in price of doing something next year. That's what you're asking.
Right. Preparing a year ahead and doing some of our armor coating.
I think that'd be difficult to bid, but we can ask the gentleman or
Come on up here again. Come on up here and talk again. I guess that...
I'm kind of thinking outside the box.
Yeah.
But the difficulty in budgeting that then is if it becomes a capital item you have to project that you're going to do that. So when you put your budget in there and you...
Right.
And
it would be something locked in.
Well, you better make sure you're going to do them because it becomes part of your capital improvement for your infrastructure.
Right.
So we count on X amount, and it's not a bad idea, but there's constraints at the state that make us do things a certain way.
Right.
But from the business side of it, what is the feasibility?
A lot of the counties that we do throughout the state of Nebraska, what they do is they bid early, like you guys are, and they'll want it done by July 1st, and then they'll come back in August or September and bid for the next year. That way they lock on that year's oil price.
Okay.
So, and right now, you're 100% correct. It's down about 35%. From last year, the oil is. So it is good. If you're going to arm a coat next year, I would suggest that you take advantage of the low prices because this is the first time in 20 years we've had low prices.
Right.
Yeah. So what the business you do, what percent bids this out already in August or September then?
Right now, we're usually full by May 1st, and right now we're two-thirds full.
Two-thirds full.
Yeah.
So, but does a fourth of them or half of them, you have a fair amount of business, I guess, booked in August already.
There's very seldom, unless out west. When you get out west, that's a different scenario. Like last year, we did the city of Scotts Bluff and the county of Scotts Bluff, and we did two other counties out there. They always bid late. They always prepare us to be out there in August, so they're on there next year's budget.
Oh, okay.
Because of the capital spending they do out there or something. I don't
yes.
know.
Yep.
But all the other counties in Nebraska always bid early like you guys. So that way you're getting the best price. Waiting, you're getting the worst price. Even in July, August, you're going to take a chance of a higher price. But it won't be as bad as next year's price.
Thank you.
So,
thank you for explaining that a little bit. That's something we should sure have discussion about at a future meeting, I believe.
Myron?
Yeah.
With what Matt had budgeted for armor coating and where the bids came in, he's told me we've got approximately room there to use up our budgeted allocation for this year for armor coating of another 11 miles plus. I would like to see us, Larson Road would probably be one of them. It's not bad. I had armor coated for a long time. Use up those additional 11 miles, if possible, and have those added to this bid, and get as much done on the worst roads we have left to armor coat for this year.
I think we've had discussion in the past. This board has had about maintaining our roads and the condition of some of the roads and how important it is to keep up on this armor coating. And that there was a period of years there where we're not able to keep up financially and stuff. And then this year we did budget with the idea of doing so many dollars, and hopefully that was going to get the 29 miles done. And as we see by the bids that. There's room for more. So I think that's a very good idea.
And certainly our county asphalt roads are an investment of $500,000 to $1 million a mile, depending on the shape of that, whether it's fully shouldered in that. And when you're talking $11,000 for armor coating to keep that road in the better part of its lifespan, that's a very good investment. And
we'll continue this discussion in just a little bit. We do have a timed event at 9:45, so we'll visit with Galen here in a minute. And I entertain a motion to close all bids for the 2016 or newer tandem axle dump truck. We need to do that now, though.
So moved.
Motion by Durgan, second by Thiemann. Vote 7-0 in favor.
I just want to know how much money we're going to let Terry spend today. Shut him off.
And as long as Galen's looking at these, I think when we come back to the armor coating, we'll have some more of that discussion if you guys don't mind. But we have you have the truck bids there already?
Yeah, oh.
This first bid is from RDO Truck Center out of Lincoln, Nebraska. Uh,
with Christmas stuff.
Okay. This particular, I'll kind of go through this. It's for a 2017 Mack truck, model number GU713. Gross vehicle weight of 71,500. Horsepower of the engine, 505 horse. Dump body make will be a Bebo, snowplow, and spreader Hinkey. The bid price for this unit is $164,567. Trade-in allowance, $25,000. Total price, minus the trade-in allowance, $139,567. 14 to 17 weeks from time of order.
A little over 3 months, 4 months, probably 4 months.
There, when I say there's two more bids in there, too. Under them other tabs, they're just different boxes.
Okay.
Oh.
I see it. This same thing, same truck, same... same chassis, same everything else. This dump body on this one is a Galleon, and then the snow plow and spreader, a Hinkey, the same. That first one was a Bebo box. Bid price for this unit is $163,677, and trade-in allowance $25,000 for a total price on this unit of $138,667. The last one is the same chassis again. This would be a Chrysteel body and then a Monroe snowplow hitch and Monroe spreader. Make the snowplow Monroe. Pusher axles a link. I don't know if I mentioned that. Are there links on all of them?
Yes.
Okay. Bid price for this unit, $163,792. Trade-in allowance, $25,000. A total price on this unit would be $138,792. Now, each with this comes a complete book. It has the Bebo literature, all the literature on the equipment that will be installed on it. This bid is from Wicks Sterling Truck Incorporated out of Omaha. Same. There's two different types of. Okay, on this one is 2017 Western Star 4700 SF. Horsepower 505. The bid with body quote with a Bebo box on this first one. The snow plow is a Hinkey and the spreader is a Henderson. Bid price for this unit is $156,706. Trade-in allowance of $34,000. A total price on this unit of $122,706. Watson Chandler Pusher.
What's the weight rating on that one, Terry?
62,500 CBW. Just a copy of that. There are some options involved here. Assume that's in that bid. Okay. Second bid for same chassis. The dump body make would be a Galleon. Bid price for the, it runs a Hinkey snowplow, Henderson spreader, Watson Chandler pusher. Bid price $155,806, trade in allowance $34,000. Total price on this unit $121,806. Were there just two options on this one? Are there any of the gentlemen's here?
No.
Oh. I think that's what that, those are the two options that come with this, this vehicle right here. And once again, all the literature is here on the boxes and the. These all came together. Okay, this is the same. Just using a different dump body. It's a T, I'll just spell it to you, a TBEI/MAB/Ultra. Pusher's the same, snow plows is a Hinkey, and make of the spreader, model of the spreader is a, or make of the spreader is a Swenson. Bid price of $163,931. Trade-in allowance $34,000. Total price on this unit is $129,931. Same horsepower, same chassis, is the way it looks. Watson Chandler pusher. Sure, one more, yeah. Another bid sheet, same company, except this is for a Cristeal bid. Same chassis, Watson Chandler pusher, snowplow Monroe, make of spreader Monroe. Bid price of one, and the Cristeal box. Bid price for the unit $155,931. Trade in allowance $34,000. Total price on this unit $121,931. And it has in this particular one delivery date 75 to 90 days. This one is from Cornhusker International Trucks Incorporated. Okay, 2017 International 7600, GVW of 73,200. Horsepower 475, pusher axle Watson Chandler, Bebo box, says Bebo Galleon Cristeal, so I don't know if you have a choice there or not. Snowplow hitch Hinkey Monroe, make of spreader Henderson Monroe. Bid price for this unit $166,000. Trade-in allowance $47,000. Total price on this unit $119,000. Is the gentleman here for this one?
I brought the bid here. I did not prepare that.
Okay. Well, I was just. It says up here you have a choice. Is that what it would be of a Bebo?
That's a choice of whichever.
Of whichever one you prefer.
Yes.
Okay.
Then I would have to defer that to.
Right. I mean, that's the way it looks to me, because this is the only one I see, and
sure.
And you've got three options behind that.
There are several companies we work with as well.
So. Okay.
Is there no difference in price for the different boxes?
I don't think there is.
Okay. The last one is Truck Center out of Nebraska, Freightliner. Okay. This is for a 2017 Western Star chassis. I don't see the, unless I dig a little deeper here. I don't see the, oh, here we go. Okay. 2017 Western Star 4700 SF, gross vehicle weight 73,200 to 505 horsepower, pusher axle make, a Hendrickson 13K, dump body a TBEI, snow plow hitch a Monroe, make a spreader a Monroe. 90 days from date of order. The bid price is $151,500. Trade-in allowance, $38,500. Total unit price, $113,000 even. No, I think this is just informational.
Single bid? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
As we have with other items, I would like to refer these. I mean, there's a lot of different things going on in here. I would like to refer these to Galen at the Highway Department. And, you know, I don't know what time frame, but the sooner the better. But that's too much information in there to digest in one before this meeting's over. So I would guess let's wait for 2 weeks and review them. And then come back with a recommendation.
Second. We have okay. Any more discussion on that? Eric, if you want to chip in too, I think that's probably a good idea. There is a lot of information in those. And then I see that we definitely have to make a choice on the box and so on and all of that. If the only question I have, as long as that doesn't, as with the other business that we had, as long as that doesn't put a time frame in there whereby you guys aren't comfortable locking that in, I guess. Yeah.
We're okay here. Yep.
You're okay with all that?
Yeah,
okay.
Our production date would be based on order. If we have a great big order comes in prior, of course, that would set it off.
But that would set your production date off, yeah. Okay. So we will refer that to the Highway Department, and in 2 weeks, the 16th of March, we'll have it on our agenda then to which one that we will, I guess, purchase or whatever at that time. So today we're accepting all the bids. The motion was to accept all the bids in, and then we will refer them to the Highway Department. So, yeah. Any more discussion? Vote 7-0. Want to really thank you guys for bidding and being part of that. We appreciate it very much. We thank four companies. That's great and stuff. So
we appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Myron, this is just a question. And okay. I lost my budget. The finance chairman lost his budget with all the notes on it, so I got to find it. So I'm kind of – what are we waiting for any other delivery of any other equipment?
The John Deere loader.
Say again?
We haven't got the John Deere loader in yet, have we? It's close to being
scheduled. Cat loader.
Or cat loader, excuse me.
Yeah, it's supposed to be coming in this month.
What was that? Do we know what that price was?
What was that bid?
It's around $160,000, something like that.
I think that's right, Galen.
$160,000. Well, we also had a capital outlay that we used inheritance. We had $75,000. Did we pull something out of – I don't have my notes, and I can't.
I don't have anything in inheritance for this. That's why.
I'm just looking at that, and I saw that there was a $75,000 withdrawal there, and then I'm going here. Basically, what I wanted to point out is if that the cat that we're waiting on, we have $334,000 that's in that road equipment line, and so I was thinking that we had taken delivery on something because I was wondering why we budgeted so much, but we're still waiting to take delivery for payment on that.
On the loader, yes.
On the loader and on this dump truck, the thought was when we did the budget that they would come out
right.
of this budget.
So yeah, I wanted to give you a balance, but I can't because I don't remember what it was.
because I can't find all my notes. Sorry. So this, depending on those prices, that'll basically balance that out. So I think we probably budgeted pretty good, is what I'm saying, in contrast to what we over-budgeted for the armor coating. I'm just trying to contrast those. So that'll basically wipe that line out.
Jalen, have you come up with a recommendation? I guess now would be the best time as any on the armor coating.
Yes, I'd recommend we go with the low bid with Top Coat Incorporated, $310,951.03.
Okay. Can I add? I'd recommend we use up the extra dollars with extra miles at Galen's discretion, as the worst ones left out there to do, and go to what we had estimated cost and use up those dollars and do all the armor coating we can in this cycle.
Good. I know that the oldest one out there is going up from Barnston to the Liberty Blacktop, which is at 14 years, but then we get down to a little better range where, but there are a number of them coming up that need, we should look at for next year.
Matt? Yeah. I just want to throw out, so we budgeted $435,000 by accepting the bid of, I'm going to call it $311,000 because we're $310,951. So roughly $311,000, that leaves roughly $124,000 in excess that we would have outside of what the bid actually came in. So based on what they've bid per mile of just about $10,700 per mile, that leaves roughly the ability to do 11.5 miles. So I would would suggest, just to make sure that we stay under, that we shoot for around 11 miles. That would increase the project by 38%. And from a maintenance standpoint, and to try and provide a value statement to that, I think that's a pretty good investment for taxpayers' money for maintenance and protection of the integrity of the roads based on what we budgeted. So just roughly 38% increase in the scope of the project.
So that would put us roughly at 40 miles or whatever that we'd be able to do. And that basically, which kind of speaks volume, because that would be a fourth of our current highway miles that the county has in the county.
Yep.
So, but yeah, as long as that's acceptable to the top coat and everything, that Galen's recommendation is to go ahead and accept that and then add more. But Gary?
I guess the only suggestion that I had to what Terry was, was that a motion, Terry?
No, I guess I was just talking. No, I guess.
My suggestion would be that on Galen's recommendation and then come back here to approve them 11 miles so that it stays within our plan as far as what we're covering.
Within our budget.
The other thing is to note is that this is inheritance fund dollars, so this isn't off general tax obligation. So it's not like we're going to be able to provide people a tax savings. We're using those dollars that have come into the inheritance tax for capital improvements. So it's not part of the general obligation that we tax people.
Yeah. Good point, Matt.
Go ahead and make a motion, Chair.
Myron, I would like to make a motion that we accept Top Coat's bid on the miles we had, and with the ability to approve the extra miles to come up with the total amount that we had budget of $435,000.
Second.
We have a motion by Juergen, second by Hill. Does everybody understand that or familiar? We intend to do the 29 miles that was bid, and then we'll have to work with Galen, but we plan on doing another 11 miles roughly to make sure we stay underneath our $435,000 budget that we did. So, vote 7-0. Thank you guys very much for coming and bidding.
Further on, Matt, do you have? You don't have your notes.
I got them somewhere. I gotta find them.
off the top of our heads, does anybody remember last year's cost per mile?
I thought it was
right
a little
around
over
10,000.
I thought it was a little over 12.
Well,
was it?
I do know, Gary, when the city, which is probably 4 weeks ago or so, when they did their armor coating project that they have, I called down there and it came in approximately $15,000 a mile. I know it's apples
it's
to oranges here, but
I was trying to think what we.
Well, I think the same company did it last year, didn't they, Galen?
Galen.
Didn't the same company do the armor coating last year that got it this year?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you remember about what we were per mile last year? Any idea? Or?
I wrote that down somewhere if I can find it.
12 is about where I thought it was.
I think it was about a third of the house.
You ran just under $12,000 a mile.
Okay. $12,000. I guess I would just like to see us discuss what I said earlier, that maybe we look at come July or closer to time that we have the budget, as long as the oil prices stay depressed, that maybe we look at go ahead and look.
You mean in the next budget year, but maybe getting it done this year?
Get it locked in.
Okay.
They'll do it next year, but bid it this. How many miles did we do last time? And then also with our bond issue, how many miles did we do? You know, so we've done a fair amount of armor coating.
About 50 miles.
The only thing to keep in mind is I really like that idea, too. The only issue might be we're going to have a big capital outlay out of that coming up. And
with Hickory Road, we're going to have the capital outlay is.
I'm not exactly sure where dollars will all be on that.
Yeah. Yes.
By that time, we might have a better idea exactly where everything's coming from and how it's going to work. But
I said before, it's a combination of inheritance, road and bridge sinking, and general obligation.
Moving on. Next agenda item, approve or disapprove Schultz and Associates, PC, for auditing services for a three-year period beginning with the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2016. Don, you want to talk a little bit about that? Or
should all have a,
I saw them somewhere.
A front page and a back page of the pricing. We had the state last year, and we try to do that maybe around every 4 years, so this would fall in line. And I think I gave Roger a copy, but I don't think anything has changed as far as copying from Schultz. Actually, I think the price might be down a little
bit. I think it was, I saw it.
Here's the
$9,000 and some.
It's $9,850 per each year.
Thank you, Fred.
Per each year.
Yeah, it doesn't have an increase.
For each of the 3 years. In the past several cycles, every fourth year, we've had the state come down and do the audit. And otherwise, I believe Schultz has done it all the other times, but this time we have a bid of $9,580 to do it each of the next 3 years at that price.
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
Discussion. Vote. 7-0 in favor.
I would say that just I think it's good practice to invite the state auditor to come in every so often. I think
this would fall right in the line, so we're not getting in the middle of somebody's agreement. We just at the end of this, getting toward the third year, then we just contract with the state for that year, and then we can roll into the next.
Yep. Next up, approve or disapprove the purchase of a model DS850 high-speed digital image scanner for voting machine, it's called.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Bauman, second by Byers. Discussion. Don, go ahead and explain this a little bit.
Well, this is the machine that we use to count ballots. I think you guys had some discussion 2 weeks ago, and then we had some at the committee meetings. The machine that we currently have now, I did confirm with ES&S, and that was manufactured in 1996. So we have issues with slow ballots, jamming, it stops continually. It does read correct. I want to make sure everyone knows that we do not have a problem with reading the ballots and totaling the votes. We do have an audit performed. Counties are selected by the Secretary of State's office to check races to make sure everything is being counted correctly. I had brought this to the board longer ago about getting a different machine because of the time it is taking to count ballots. Both Doug and Scott have been in here when we've counted. They've both witnessed. Myron has been in here for elections. So I'm bringing this forward. This is the newest machine. Whether the state comes up with more money or not in 2 or 3 years, nobody knows. I have had comments from the public. What's taken so long? Why is it, those type of things. So the ball's in your court, I guess, to whether we move forward with a different machine.
Myron, this is one item I had some phone calls last night on. The basic complaint was this. Are we going to be using this time same type of system in 10 years? Is there something going to change within the next 5 to 10 years that we won't be using this type of ballot system anymore? It could be electronic, could be anything. We don't know. Is there any, and I get it. I mean, we're going to spend this money now, but is it going to be, can they guarantee you we're going to be on the same ballot system for 20 years or whatever the life of that machine is? That was the question.
Well, if we had a crystal ball.
Well, I know, Don.
I don't know.
I know.
You know,
I know.
Who knows? Everything has changed.
And I understand you got to have the equipment, you got to have it working.
Yes.
I mean, I get that,
yes,
too. That was one question, and it was a valid question, I thought.
It's a valid question, I guess. That's probably more not only with the legislature up here, there something they might decide on. It's also with the United States, you know. I mean, if they decide to implement something that we counties or whatever, we're by statute, mm-hmm, we get to do, mm-hmm, the vote, mm-hmm, counting or whatever, but we don't get to have control over some of that. And I guess I look at, you can look at it from that perspective, but also look at it from the other perspective. If we don't do anything and we wait 10 years and we still have the same machine, Don's already told us we all get to help count. So,
Don,
exactly. Sometimes you have to move forward whether you like to or not.
No, I understand. I understand completely their concern with spending. It's a little over $104,000.
Is the mail-in ballots causing more trouble than the other ones?
The issues that we see probably more so is if we have moisture, your ballots can warp. People eating, you know, food gets spilled on them. Those type of things, blanks. It stops. We're not really sure why sometimes because we can't see anything, but apparently there's something setting it off. It will run really, really slow, and then it will pick up, and it will run really, really slow. We have it maintained. There's a maintenance on it every election. I don't have the answer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, the trend is probably more mail-in ballots.
It is.
That's the way the trend's been. That's probably the way it's going. So if that's the trend, that could be the issue, the folding, the pleats in the ballots, whatever you'd have.
Well, the other option that we have when we have this pretty much limits it to special elections as of right now, when we send out special election ballots, we could fold them and save dollars that way by ballots. But I've been avoiding as many folds as I can because my machine doesn't want to run the folds.
Okay. Now, are they quite certain the new machine will take care of some of those issues as far as a little bit of spilled drink on them that maybe not causing them to read right? I mean, is it going to...
This one is a lot more forgiving. She ran yesterday, and Scott was up here to witness that she ran a stack of freshly unfolded ballots that went through. It will read everything as far as inks besides a highlighter, and there was one other one that they said that it wouldn't read, but otherwise it will read two or three times more of the things that people might be using than what my other machine will do. It doesn't seem to bother as far as any spills or anything like that on it. It's a machine.
Yep.
The machine's going to have a problem. I can't say that there's going to be 100% perfect.
She did accentuate the fact that this machine is designed to handle those folded type ballots, and it's one of the things that it does and does very well compared to what we've had.
Oh, you save on putting those in regular envelopes instead of the big ones for mailings. Do you have any
cost
idea?
Cost your ballot is more, and then the cost of your envelope, the bigger the envelope plus your postage, you can mail them a different rate.
But you don't have any idea what the difference in price would be?
She told us our ballot right now is like 29 cents a ballot, and a short ballot, I'm trying to think what we paid the last time. It's not half. It might have been 20 cents. You know, I don't remember, Scott. I don't know if you remember the amount that she said yesterday, or Denny. I don't know. Denny was there, and Scott was there as well.
But if you could fold it and put it in a regular envelope, you'd save half the postage, because isn't I think it's over a dollar.
I can go with a short ballot on a special election.
Oh, on a special election, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, on that.
Until the state decides the change of the size of the ballot, right now we can't. And as far as hand counting, things like that, the law does not allow us to do hand counting. It has to be through electronic machine.
Now,
the statutes.
What happens if you have a ballot that for some reason does have something spilled on it or whatever and it kicks it out? Is that ballot just void?
No. It goes through our canvassing board and they reproduce that ballot so that they have that ballot that the voter voted and then a clean ballot, and you have your canvassing board consists of a Democrat and a Republican. Mm. And they sit side by side and they reproduce what that voter voted onto a good ballot.
Okay.
And that would save us too, because there's times that we've had a lot of them that wouldn't go through that we have to take to our canvas board and they have to copy and then sign and do those ballots to reproduce it so it will run through the machine.
How many mail-out ballots do you do now?
Right now, we just sent out cards for people who are on a list to receive it, and we sent out 3,200 cards. I think it was 3,200 cards. That's for this primary. It varies. People, some will get off the list, some will come onto the list. So last general election, we had over 4,000 that were.
How many voters do we have in Gage County?
The last time we looked, we had over 14,000. I don't know what it is right now. I haven't looked.
Does seem like a lot of expense for the system. One of them had calculated out if we have the system 10 years, it's going to cost us about $1.40 a ballot to count them. And
we have the choice of waiting and see what the state does. We can struggle through with this one and wait. It's.
And then that may or may not be a better option at that time.
I don't know if they'll give us funding. I don't know if they know the machines are getting old. That is in discussion.
There's nothing out there on the horizon right now as far as anything that.
No, the only thing that they're talking maybe in a couple of years, a machine that isn't quite as large as this one, but that's on the drawing board right now. It's a 450. Whether that is available in 2 years, right now I'm kind of just with a lot of unknowns. We just don't know where things are going to go.
And whether it comes.
And if the legislature will find money for us, they may push it all back to the counties in 2 years. That's been talked about, that they won't cover the maintenance and they won't pay for the machines.
There has been I believe there has been a bill proposed in the legislature.
There is.
If or when that will be acted upon or a decision from, that's unknown.
I think the task force is being developed. And then she told us yesterday, 2019, they're looking at maybe knowing something.
Maybe.
That was what conversation they had, ES&S had.
And the new machine may come with its own new bugs.
Well, we know we have a 20-year-old machine that has created some issues. Right now we have integrity in the system. But not that many years ago on a federal level, there was a huge issue with regard to the validity of a campaign and the validity of a vote. The last thing we need is to have a 20-year-old piece of equipment that we know has had some failures and to open up the door for something because we decided we didn't want to do it.
I'd like to ask if Doug or Scott have, because I have opened up the elections where individuals can come in and view my process. They have to stay 8 foot away from the ballot. As a perspective from someone on the other side, I guess, you've witnessed what we've gone through. I mean, do you have any comment as far as...
Well, we hear a lot of things Don does, you know, people wanting the results. Of course, we're all kind of instant gratification. We want them right now, and we hear that frequently over the, you know, past elections when there have been problems, when it's jammed or, you know, you have to refeed and things like that. And, you know, I guess if you kept a car for 20 years and you got most of your life out of it, there's kind of your answer, I guess, as far as I'm concerned.
And Scott, I believe we ought to ask at committee meeting or somewhere, too, you guys, about your deadlines or how quick you need to...
Yeah.
I told Don on Monday if I could, I'd pay for it myself.
Well, that's it.
Is that a motion? I'll withdraw mine if you jump in.
Thank you, Scooter.
Gary, my question is okay, we're $105,000. Kind of a nickel and dime thing here, but installation and training fee, there's $3,500 for installation and training fee. Is it, what does that amount to? I mean, well, for $3,500, I'll install the darn thing and I'll show you how, I'll read the owner's manual.
But, I mean, you're not certified though.
But how many companies can we choose from?
One.
We have one company. They have you over a barrel.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Seems like something good to produce.
That's the hard thing. But you have to be certified to the Secretary of State's office to be able to do this because of the integrity of the vote. So,
yeah.
I did question on a few of these things, and there's not.
It seems petty asking about
on the annual maintenance agreement, is that a yearly agreement? And that, I mean, there's certain years that you won't.
I know, and I discussed that same thing yesterday with her and kind of went back and forth with her.
But that's a...
That's
must
flat.
Have.
She says they will not.
That's the one that doesn't make any sense to me. I can get it in the election cycle years.
Well, and the way she explained that one to me is because there is continuous updates on software and firmware, and we will continue to get those. If you lapse in your maintenance, you no longer have.
Okay.
And that's, so I said, okay. She says they will not budge on it. The Secretary of State actually even argued them with our old machine on that.
And this is something we want to make the point on. This isn't just a machine. This is buying software for this machine and maintaining that software as well. And it's not just like we're buying that 850. We're buying the software program that's going to go on, and we're going to maintain it.
Without any stopping or issues, it's supposed to count 10,000 ballots in an hour. That's a lot of ballots.
That's a lot of ballots.
So.
Now someone's going to hold you to that, Don. You shouldn't have said that.
I said no stopping, no other things. Well,
yep. So we're going to start counting other counties' ballots for them then?
No, we're not going there, Gary.
So, we want to talk about that.
We do have a motion to go ahead and purchase it with the maintenance agreement and a second. Any more discussion?
Is there a smaller machine? If that's, that seems kind of...
Not right now. That's what I said. There's this 450 coming out maybe in two years.
This is it.
Like I said, we can wait, and we can try to use the one we have. There's nothing that says we have to move forward. But.
Nope. We have a motion to approve it and a second vote. 7-0 in favor. We had a little bit of discussion at committee meeting. We did go on a closed session on TP Road. Roger has a little bit of comments on that, I guess, he's going to make. But I, after that, we probably have a possibility of going into TP Road also. They've informed us, one of the parties has, that they have hired legal counsel. So then it's into negotiations, and some of that is requiring a closed session. So, but it's not on the agenda for closed session, but we will probably go into that here in a minute. But Roger's, I asked Roger to make some comments on... he'll comment on a road like that, a road situation.
Yeah, and I'll just suggest to Byron that we go into closed session just because we do have the letter from them indicating that they're rattling the sabers and litigation. A lot of what we'll be talking about would be my advice to you as far as strategy in dealing with the situation. I would suggest it'd just be easier to go into closed session, not that we're hiding anything. It's just... Somebody may say something that would obviously impact negotiations. So I would just make that generally, and then I can answer any questions you may have as far as roads. And I think it'd be good to have Galen sit in with us. He's got certainly firsthand knowledge on this matter, too.
And the TP Road, just for the press, that's the one out there by the Blue River that basically got washed out that the Midland Township, I think it's Midland Township, and Larry Gernewald have been visiting with us about, and we visited with FEMA and all of that, and there's a property owner out there, and nothing's been done yet. We've talked about it since this spring, since it's been washed out, and we haven't progressed, but they've also hired a lawyer now, and so
we have issues.
So, and we have requested individuals involved in this to come in
and meet us
to talk to the board, and they haven't shown up to come in to talk to us.
We've had a couple meetings scheduled with them that they were going to be here, and they never have. So we're trying to decide how to proceed with that. That's not going to go away. So there won't be any decision today coming out of that. In the future, there probably at times will be some decisions on TP Road, and then we'll keep you abreast. But otherwise, at this time, I will entertain a motion to go into closed session necessary for the protection of public interest or for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of an individual.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Beyer, seconded by Hill. Vote 7-0. We're going to take just a 5-minute break there, Terry.
Talking about the cars.
About scooter stands.
We better adjourn the meeting. Anybody else?
Entertain a motion.
I'll finish. I'll send that over to you as soon as I get that back from him. No, I'm just telling you why.
Entertain a motion. Motion. We on?
Yep.
Entertain a motion to come out of a closed session at 11:11 on the clock.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, seconded by Byers. Vote. That's Teeman.
Teeman, what are you doing?
I didn't know if I was ready yet.
Motion is 5-4, 1 nay, and Juergens is gone. Absent.
Five,
so.
1 nay.
Teeman's nay.
Juergens absent.
What the heck? Oh, I got to figure that one out.
Meeting adjourned.
Oh, yeah.
I was looking around. I didn't know if we had enough.
Remember popping that fence.
Yeah.
Roger.
With the fence building.
Oh, yeah.